do you find your kids or teenagers, or the kids and teenagers who you're around, somewhat disconnected, discontented even, a little listless? Joining me now is Dr. Nicholas Carderis. He is the author of two books I'm a huge fan of, Digital Madness, How Social Media is Driving Our Mental Health Crisis, and How to Restore Our Sanity, and a book I read about 7 or so years ago from Dr. Carderis called Glow Kits. Totally changed my mind, perspective, and really turned on a light bulb for things I think a lot of people had no idea about. That is how technology impacts kids. I think most people today recognize something's up, but don't really know what's happening. Now, Dr. Nicholas Carderis is the country's foremost technology addiction expert. He's doing work internationally. He's an Ivy League educated psychologist, and he's taught neuropsychology at the doctoral level. We're linking to all of his books, and today he's here to discuss ways to help teens find peace and joy and naturally reduce screen time. Dr. Carderis, thanks for coming back here on Trending.
All right. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be here with you, Timari. Thank you.
There seems to be a massive disconnectedness, not just with kids who are perhaps coming to your program, such as Omega and others, needing true intervention, but across the board, a lot of teens today are disconnected, a little listless. And I'd love to hear from you ways that adults, from parents to caretakers, teachers, kin, and even family members, can help teens to overcome this disconnectedness. What's happening?
Yeah, so a lot of your viewers have probably heard about the loneliness epidemic that's going on with young people. And of course, we know that depression rates and TikTok and influencers, and we know that, you know, self-harm and suicide rates have skyrocketed. So I really think what's happening on a deeper fundamental level is a poverty of spirit. Young people are feeling an emptiness inside. We used to call it a hole in the soul. But there's a poverty of spirit, there's a poverty of purpose. And so they're filling all those empty, that void, they're filling it with digital content or other things. So rather than sometimes turning the telescope and looking at how toxic the digital world is, which of course it is, I talk about, can we strengthen our children's psychological and spiritual immune system so that they are more resilient or fortified or immunized against, you know, this whole digital world that we're all swimming in, that swallowed up the world in the last 10 years. And so, you know, I talk about a couple of different things that we can help with our kids. And, you know, one of them is helping kids really find the true purpose or passion in their lives, something that really makes them feel, you know, Joseph Campbell talked about finding your bliss, you know, finding that special something that makes you get up in the morning and it makes you feel a sense of purpose. Because again, a lot of the teenagers and young people that I work with just will say, I don't feel any sense of purpose in my life. And the digital world can complicate and confuse that. So If you can get a clear sense of that, that's helpful.
I'm a millennial, and from my generation down, I'll see over and over again, Dr. Carderis, where my peer set and those below me will say, I'm not good at anything. And they'll say it over and over, monotonously. And I'm always startled by that, because I think it's just so sad that someone would just say over and over again, I'm not good at anything. Because it could be throwing a ball. It could be loading a dishwasher. I mean, There are plenty of mundane things as well as grand gifts. And that's part of what this reminds me of when you're saying this.
And you're not going to be good at anything unless you try something. You know, so many of our young people, unfortunately, are, you know, let's face it, they're couch surfing. And, you know, because if you're staring at a screen, you're not really trying a hobby or a sport or playing a musical instrument, or like you said, even the mundane thing like loading a dishwasher. You know, you're not finding your inner whatever that is. And so to piggyback with that, because I think it speaks to what you just said about, you know, people who think that they're not good at anything, it's how do we help our young people build a sense of grit, resilience? You know, the psychologist Angela Duckworth wrote a book called Grit. And she talked about, you know, she did a whole study on West Point cadets, and she was able to identify this grit scale. And she defined grit as a combination of passion and persistence. So a lot of our young people don't have that trait of stick-to-itivism because, you know, they've grown up in that instant gratification world that so many of us have, that, you know, sticking to something, being able to lean in towards adversity, developing a sense of grit to pick yourself back up if you've experienced any kind of setback. That's also something that I've seen with the millennials and the Gen Zers that I work with is really hard to find. And so you only develop grit by practice, right? But you fall down, you get back up, and you encourage that, you support that. You don't helicopter that, because a lot of our kids, unfortunately, today are being raised by parents who do things for them, who are trying to immunize them by bubble wrapping them and making sure that they don't scrape their knee. But meanwhile, they're robbing their children of their opportunity to grow and to develop their own sense of autonomy and resilience.
And yep. I see it in today's culture. A lot of people talk about the dangers as if dangers have increased today versus before. And that's a whole debate in and of itself. There's much to be said to what's influencing that mindset. I recently read an article of an interview of you at Forbes magazine, diving into these things that kids need to find that sense of peace and joy. And you discuss grit and you discuss resilience. You dive into helping them to use their minds to think. Can you share with me some of those tools that we can use as adults for those teenagers that we have a sphere of influence over today?
Yeah, so there's two things in terms of using their minds, because, you know, obviously we want we'd like all of our kids to be able to critically think, to be able to use their minds and use their God-given abilities to reason. Reason used to be the sword of reason, was, you know, part of the Enlightenment and in the ancient world. And yet so many young people today in the social media world, it's an emotions economy. And so they don't use critical thinking, but it's, how does that make you feel? And what's the emotional response? And because that's where social media lives, right? It lives on getting that reptilian part of our brain activated. So I talk about, in order to develop that critical thinking as well, first of all, you can engage your kids by just starting off by just talking about current events. Like, did you read anything in news today that's interesting to you? And then having a discussion, but it's sort of a Socratic discussion about it. And when I say Socratic, I mean question and answer approach. Socrates was the smartest man in the ancient world because he admitted that he knew nothing, but he knew how to ask the right questions. And he knew to sort of probe. And so if you talk to your children about anything that they've seen, whether it's big picture issues like spirituality or God, to some local political issue. So why do you believe that? And let's analyze that. And let's use a critical lens to discuss and to analyze what you're talking about. So we're not just using our emotions, but we're using our ability to do analytical and critical thinking. And now what can help in that is reading the classics. If we encourage kids to start reading the classics, it develops and it tunes their minds in a way that is much more productive and can be, I mean, they're fascinating, and the classics can be, if once you develop an eye and an ear for them, they're entertaining, but it can also help you learn how to think and not just be entertained. And so if you read the classics and then you question your children about what they're hearing, what they're seeing. So you could have really a cool discussion with your kids rather than, and sometimes you might discover that, you know, there's a little bit of ideology being sprinkled in there. I'm teaching back at a university again, and I was shocked. I've got to admit it. It's just one of the state universities of New York. And, you know, I'm teaching graduate courses in mental health. And I used to teach a course called Human Behavior. And Human Behavior 10 years ago when I taught it was everyone from Freud to Carl Jung to Piaget. And now this year, the textbook that I was given to teach from was, the first chapter was critical race theory. The second chapter was Marxism. It was how to be an anti-racist. It was really ideologically brainwashing content that had changed so radically in the 10 years that I'd been out of the academic field that I had to start questioning my dean and saying, wow, this is different. This isn't human behavior that we're teaching. We're teaching something really different here. And so sometimes when you talk to your kids, you'll find out if their teachers are teaching them things that are ideologically driven versus, you know, educationally sound.
Yeah. And that's the scary part of education today is I think a lot of parents say, okay, we're paying for this good education, or we moved to this good school district so that you could have the education that you do. And then they're a little bombasted years later when they realize that wasn't what I expected, and it's a little too late. And I'm hearing this from people in all walks of life, from the public to the private to the Catholic, non-Catholic schools, that their kids are coming out with ideologies that they think they know things, but they're very emotive, as you're saying, that they have no critical thinking skills, and they're snowflakes, as my generation has been called, to trigger warnings. Now, I want to come back to something you mentioned earlier with regard to grit and resilience, because I feel like we could touch on that a little more. How do you encourage parents to, or just adults, to form this in their kids? You mentioned not just diving in every time they're hurt and not overly helicopter parenting, but what are some concrete things to help to build it up as well?
So, yeah, and thank you, by the way. And grit and resilience is the anti-snowflake. It's the antidote to snowflakedom, right, that you mentioned, because that's the epidemic right now. Any time you develop, you have to be proficient at something, whether it's a sport or a musical instrument. That takes grit, right? I have two teenage twin sons who are just turned 17, actually, and they both played musical instruments and sports since they were little. My one son's a catcher. The other son plays third base. The one plays the violin. The other plays the piano. Either one of those activities, whether it's sports or music, to get good at it takes perseverance. And it's not just something you can push. It's not like a video game where you can just, you know, stop and just come back to it and stop. It takes a mindset. And that mindset has to be developed relatively early on, because unfortunately, if you develop kind of a, you know, they used to call it fragile and anti-fragile. If you have a fragility mindset and you give up when you develop adversity, mom and dad say, oh, it's okay. You don't really like that. You don't have to participate in that. You don't really like that. You don't have to do that. Now, I'm not saying to force our kids to do things that they don't want to do. You don't force a kid to play a sport that they don't want to play. But once they've chosen something, to encourage and nurture their continued participation and striving towards excellence in that, because, you know, somehow we've demonized merit and excellence, right? What's wrong with healthy competition, with being the best baseball player, the best violin player? What's wrong with excelling in your chosen passion? Again, not to the point where you have to be obsessively, in a neurotic way, kill your opposition. But we don't do that enough, you know, and it sounds so stereotypical, the 10th place participation trophies, but, but, you know, that has created the snowflake effect. And, you know, unfortunately, teaching 24, 25-year-old graduate students that I'm teaching now, I mean, I've had literally students break down crying in my class based on what another student said. And these are graduate students who are going to be mental health providers who couldn't handle somebody saying something from a different perspective, and they broke down crying in class. So when I, and that didn't used to happen 10 years ago. And so again, to me, it's, I'm attributing it to, you've grown up in this world where it's all about your feelings and your emotions, and you've lived in this echo chamber, and now you're hitting the real world, or at least and I wouldn't even say academia is the real world, but it's a taste of it. And totally can't handle life on life's terms because you didn't develop that grit and resilience and the ability to tolerate different points of view, because it doesn't have to challenge your whole sense of being and force you to crumble onto the floor into the fetal position, sucking your thumb because somebody said something you didn't like.
And I laugh, but we actually have instances of things such as these happening. You're mentioning being back in the education sphere again and teaching. And this is some of what you're saying with regard to developing that grit and resilience. I love where you point to developing those skills with instruments and the perseverance that's required. I remember a couple of stories when I was a kid. I grew up dancing. I danced with the Russian Ballet Company in Washington, D.C. when I was 13 years old. I was accepted into their dance program. And I remember times when I was much younger, I remember not wanting to go to class or just kind of feeling lazy and frustrated. And I'd find these excuses. And I remember my parents being very firm, specifically my mom, saying, you have to follow through. If you don't want to take classes next month, you've got to let me know. But we've paid for tuition for you for this month. Right. You're going to go to class. You're not going to be lazy. And if you don't go today, you're going to make up the class tomorrow. It was when you had the opportunity to make up the classes. Right. And she would say over and over again, follow through. And praise God, I have this great skill of dancing. I even got to teach professionally. It's incredible to see that if I had not been in the thick of that, the politics that you endure, the disagreements, the lack of fairness, or the perseverance that you're discussing, that was developed through that skill. I have a question, because I think the challenge I'm seeing is these kids are playing, whether it's dance for me, baseball for another, an instrument for another. It's almost as if they go through their high school education. They think, well, this is what I'm going to do because this is what I'm good at. And then the world is crushed because they won't play violin professionally, or they won't receive a scholarship. How do you navigate the balance between letting your life be overcome and consumed by that skill or that sport versus helping it be something to form the character?
That is such a great and complex question. And by the way, I loved your dancing story and your mom's pushing you through that, because that's exactly what I'm talking about. It's exactly what I'm saying, giving that nudge when the kid needs it, when they're due that. What you bring up is really a great point, right? Because there's only so many Michael Jordan or LeBron Jameses of the world, right? So a kid devotes, you know, 8 hours a day playing a sport, but they're not maybe going to be at that level that it's going to be their career. And the reality of it is, when I have worked with some elite athletes. You know, I did a thing with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, actually during training camp this season. I had the opportunity to work with some of their rookies on character development. Right. And the people who get to the top of their profession, they do it at the expense of everything else in their life. Think of the, you know, you were a dancer. So think of like the gold medal figure skaters. And we've read the stories, the biographies of some of these Olympic athletes. They devote their entire youth and adolescence and young adulthood to their sport, 12, 14 hours a day of hard practice. And then let's say they do achieve the top of their profession, but then they flame out because, you know, then they've aged out by age 20 or 21. And now what? So life after sports, like, you know, one of my best friends was a really highly recruited college football player and couldn't handle life after, you know, the big stage. And I won't get into the details, but he didn't survive. He didn't survive his early midlife crisis at 25. Yes. Because of exactly what you're saying. It's one thing to develop.
It becomes their identity in a certain respect, wouldn't you say?
Right. It's we shouldn't put all of our identity eggs in our skills basket, right? So, you know, we talk about when you create your sense of identity, who am I as a human being who happens to be a good figure skater or football player or dancer? But that shouldn't, all my happiness eggs shouldn't be in that basket, because once that's over, or if I break a leg or if I get an injury and I can't do that anymore, now I'm crushed. Now I can't handle life because my whole identity has been defined by that. Now, it's a great outlet for me to develop, like you said, with your dancing, you learned to stick with something and to follow through. Follow through became the skill that now you can apply to everything. Following through in your radio career, following through in your personal life, following through in every aspect of your life. But your life didn't have to fall apart when you stopped dancing. And that's the tipping. There's a tipping point where you become so obsessively devoted to something that, yes, you may be the best in the world at it, but then when it's no longer maybe a part, you know, you can no longer do it, or it's not part of your day-to-day life anymore, you don't have any sense of identity anymore because your identity is so linked to that. Mm-hmm. That's the trap that we need to avoid. We should have a deeper spiritual identity where we're profoundly spiritually tethered and psychologically strong beings who happen to do all these amazing, cool things if we have varied and interesting lives, but that we don't overly identify with those things that we do.
And I love that you said that, because I can say personally, I went from dancing 40 plus hours a week in high school at 17 years old. I went to college and I thought I was going to dance through college. Economy tanked, everything happens. I find myself on a college campus with no car. Life is different than we expected. And I go from dancing in 40 plus hours a week to none. And it was a shock, but it was because I had faith. Because I was around people of substance of quality, because I had a strong family dynamic, that all of these things were in place, that even in the face of that challenging identity loss from dance, that wasn't the fullness of my identity. And I think that's what kids have today, whether there are different things going on at home, their identity becomes that skill. Yet at the same time, as we're discussing, I love what you're saying, Dr. Cardaris, we need those skills to train and teach those important things such as grit and resilience. You can find Dr. Nicholas Cardaris at drcardaris.com. That's drcardaris.com. That's drcardaris.com. I'm posting a link on social media as well as in the episode episode notes for today's show at relevantradio.com/trending. Please catch his book, Glow Kids and Digital Madness. 10 out of 10 recommend. Dr. Nicholas Carderis, thank you for joining us here on Trending and for the work you're doing, especially for our next generation of children. You can join me and listen on the Relevant Radio app to Trending with Timory live each weekday at 6 p.m. Central. Thanks for listening.